Midwest and talk about growing switchgrass on the wild, wonderful hills of West Virginia. We've already talked a little bit about the importance of switchgrass and the different things it can do in general, so I'm going to skip ahead and talk basically about why we're interested in growing switchgrass in West Virginia. The advantages of the crop are that, unlike the row crops that we've talked a little bit about today, that it requires fewer inputs as a perennial crop. We don't have to reseed it every year. You know, we can plant a stand and be able to expect to harvest material off that for 10 to 15 years. There's conservation benefits that we're interested in, including reduced erosion, improved water quality because of the lessened leaching of nutrients, and it can even provide a wildlife habitat for certain nesting birds and other species. Because it's not something you and I eat, and it's not an overly popular feed for animals, it sort of lessens that impact on the food versus fuel debate. And it uses conventional hay equipment, which is actually pretty important in Appalachia, where most of our agriculture is already forage-based. It can lower our greenhouse gas emissions, and it can sequester atmospheric carbon. Of course, there are some disadvantages to the crop. Anybody with experience, and the literature also says that it's a crop that's slow and difficult to establish. You can expect to have to wait about 3 years before you'll be able to reach a harvestable stand of switchgrass. There's no currently viable market for switchgrass as a biofuel. If I have hay today that I want to take to a cellulosic ethanol plant, I'm going to have to wait till 2012 and then ship it to Kansas, apparently. So it's bulky and difficult to transport, basically, just because it's a hay. It's not a dense energy source. And of course, there's the whole question of whether or not it's going to be economically viable to produce ethanol from cellulosic sources. What about growing switchgrass in West Virginia? Climate-wise, we're situated about perfectly. You guys are getting 19 inches of rain in Kansas. Well, we can get 45 inches of rain, so that's just great for growing switchgrass, warm summers, cool winters. We're centrally located to the U.S. energy markets, and by that I mean we're on the East Coast. There's a lot of people and a lot of demand for energy. And another use for switchgrass is actually co-firing it in coal-fired power plants. And if any type of climate change legislation passes, that's going to be a major need for biomass feed sources. And there are tons of coal-fired power plants in West Virginia. Unfortunately, though, we have very little uncommitted agricultural land. We are, after all, the mountain state, and over 75% of the state is rated land use capability class 4 and above. So we just don't have a whole lot of traditional flat agricultural lands we can devote to the production of perennial grasses for biofuel feedstocks. However, we're no strangers to traditional energy production. We've been mining coal since there have been people in West Virginia, and we've been surface mining for coal since about 1950. And this traditional method of energy production in West Virginia has created large expanses of reclaimed mine land. We reclaimed about 54,000 acres of mine lands in Appalachia in 2007. And of that, 60% roughly was reclaimed to a hayland pasture type post-mining land use, where they established basically cool season grasses for hay production or raising cattle or other livestock. Unfortunately, what happens is once the bond release period is up and the government decides that the property has been sufficiently reclaimed, the property usually just ends up unmanaged. They don't grow cattle on it, they don't harvest hay, so you get this sort of shrubby wasteland that has tons of cool season grasses on it, but you know, it gets polluted with autumn olive and other shrubs, and basically it's a totally underutilized resource as far as land is concerned. It doesn't provide jobs to West Virginia, and it's land that's basically needs some sort of purpose for it. So what about using this reclaimed mine land for biofuel production? Most of these mines are large acreage tracts, from anywhere from 1,000 to 12,000 acres in a single block. They have good road networks already established. They usually have access to transportation hubs, whether it be road or rail lines. And it's land not already previously in agricultural production. So we talk about the impact of growing biofuels on food and feed prices. Well, this is a land resource that's not already been devoted to the production of food or fuel, or feed rather. How much switchgrass can we expect to grow on mine lands? Well, nobody's really sure because it hasn't really been tried before, but we can make a good estimate about it to sort of justify this experiment. This map overlays the abandoned mine lands in red, and those are lands that were mined prior to the 1977 passage of the Surface Mine Reclamation and Control Act. And the area in blue you see there represents the highest switchgrass yield potential of over 5 tons per year. So you can see there's large blocks of mine lands available in the United States that fall within this highest level of switchgrass production. I would like to point out, though, that the abandoned mine lands are a little overemphasized. All of West Virginia is not one enormous abandoned mine land, but there are areas there that represent significant tracts of land that might be suitable for this type of production system. The same is true for lands that are mined post-SMACRA. You can see large areas, especially in southern West Virginia, that are mine lands that are oftentimes underutilized land resources. So with this in mind, the state of West Virginia and a few other interested stakeholders set out to test the feasibility of using switchgrass as a reclamation species and to see whether or not we could produce biomass on these mines. And we have three mines in the state of West Virginia that sort of represent the type of mining that goes on in the state. The Hampshire Hill Mine, located in Mineral County, is a small contour mine. It's representative of the smaller mines in the state. The Hobet and 21 and Colmac mines are both the large mountaintop removal type mines you may have heard of. The interesting thing about this experiment is we sort of have three different types of mines here. The small Hobet or Hampshire Hill mine has had biosolids applied on the land after mining, and it's also had all of the original topsoil applied back to the soil surface. The Hobet 21 mine is a huge mine, about 12,000 acres. They utilize a drag line for their mining operations. And that site has a lot of soil substitute material, which basically means it's soil mixed in with rock from the upper parts of the geologic column. The Colmac mine is a smaller mountaintop removal mine. They don't utilize the drag line, so they're able to handle that overburden with a little more alacrity than the Hobet 21 mine. So the difference in those two mines, basically, Hobet 21 and Colmac, is the amount of gray sandstone that's in that soil material. The Hobet 21 mine has a lot more unweathered rock material in the soil substitute, and the Colmac mine has a lot more weathered rock material mixed in with the soil as part of the final soil medium. Our experimental design has three upland varieties of switchgrass, Carthage, Caven Rock, and Shawnee. We want to see which of these varieties might be best for switchgrass production. And we have 3 1-acre replications of each variety at each site. So we planted about 27 acres of switchgrass in 2008. Our site preparation, I mentioned that switchgrass is a crop that kind of has to be babied at establishment. Well, we didn't really want to do that. We wanted to see if we could do it with the type of equipment and type of practices that mine operators use. So I'm used to using cul-de-packers and stuff like that to establish small forage species, but we have a D10 dozer and an earth-moving disc. So we used that at Hobet to till the soil. We did the same thing at Hampshire Hill, and this has had the biosolids applied. So it's biosolids from a sewage treatment facility mixed in with paper mill sludge. And they use the same large earth-moving equipment to till that into the soil. And then at Colmac, we had access to a little bit smaller equipment, so we decided to use that. But all three of these sites were just tilled with that offset disc harrow and planted. There was no other seed bed preparation. We used 10 pounds of pure live seed per acre. Most of the literature suggests a rate of about 6 pounds per acre, so we decided to up that a little bit. But it is nowhere near the 50 to 75 pounds of pure live seed that reclamation people are used to applying when they do their reclamation with cool season species. We used a hand broadcast seeder at the Hobet 21 mine. That's all we did to plant. We used a hydro seeder at Colmac. This is the type of equipment that most mine operators usually use to reclaim mine lands. They basically mix the seed in with fertilizer and then spray it out over the soil surface. We tried to drill the Hampshire Hill site because it was a little smoother, but unfortunately the biosolids really held a lot of water in there, and we couldn't, it was all we could do to get the drill out of the soil plots, let alone plant with them. So we used a hand seeder again at that mine site. Our soil sampling consists of 6 randomly placed 10 centimeter soil slices. Mine soils are extremely rocky, so you can forget about using a soil probe. You basically got to take the soil out with a shovel. We try and get a vertical slice so as not to overemphasize one part of the soil profile over another. We used 10 centimeters because that was estimated to be the depth of tillage. These are some of our selected physical and chemical characteristics from 2008. The things I really want to highlight are the percent rock fragment differences between Hampshire Hill and the other two mines. and finally the percent carbon between Hampshire Hill and the other two mines. The percent rock fragments at Hampshire Hill is way less than the other two mines, and the percent carbon, with the help of all that biomass applied, or biosolids applied, really bumped that up. But overall, this, all of the soil data here really is within the range of what you can expect to be able to grow switchgrass on successfully. So there are no soil chemical or physical properties that we've determined yet on any of these mine sites that really should limit the growth of switchgrass. In 2008, it was sort of inappropriate to clip biomass yet because there wasn't enough there, so we used a quadrat to estimate percent canopy cover and frequency. Here's our percent cover across variety and mine site. Cover, it's pretty low, you know, less than 3%, but it was statistically different for Caven Rock, a little bit higher, and it was a little bit lower on the Colmac mine site. The frequency, which is basically measured all the quadrats we used and how many of those had at least one switchgrass plant in them, all of that data was above 85%. So across all the mines, we had germination to the extent which we would be able to expect to have a successful stand. Now, that's not necessarily that those plants survived, but that they were there, had germinated, and were living at the time we took the frequency data. In 2009, however, we had enough grass on all the sites where we took a biomass harvest. We used an 18-inch squared collection per plot. We had six of these randomly placed in each plot. And this is some of the data that we got from that. You can see the Hampshire Hill mine is way above the other two mines. We're looking at about, you know, 6,500 kilograms per hectare for Caven Rock at the Hampshire Hill mine on its second year of establishment. So we can expect to have more of that when it reaches full maturity next year. And for a mine site, this is pretty good. Here's more of that data across all three of our mine sites. You can see for Colmac and Hobet that we have extremely variable data. I just want to highlight, this is sort of something interesting, at the Hampshire Hill mine, it really proved that the Caven Rock variety was sort of outshining the other two. You can see it here when we talk about just the yield. But it also showed up in its ability to exclude weed growth and just overall vigor. Some of our efforts for future research is, you can see this is the Colmac mine. You can look out at the plots there. Where that truck is sort of the barrier between the plots. And if you look out across there, you can see a real difference in where switchgrass is growing and where it isn't. And we don't really know why exactly some areas are better than others. So our future research area is really going to be to try and determine why the areas that are, you know, gold or green are really outperforming the areas where you can't really see the switchgrass. So what we've done is we've tied a vigor rating to all the soil samples we're collecting from now on. So we're going to try and tease out the difference between good areas and poor areas. We'd also like to see if maybe switchgrass, since it's such a small seeded forage species, if maybe it's better applied in one of those land areas that's already covered with grass and autumn olive instead of using it as the initial reclamation species. But this is a 10-year project, so we have a lot of area work that we can be doing on it. We want to see how switchgrass changes the soil over time and whether or not, you know, 5 to 10 years from now we can get enough biomass off these mines to be a successful economic endeavor. But there is potential. This is the same mine you just saw there in 2009. This guy here is about 6'4", so we've got pretty good forage growth there. And with that, I'll take any questions.
We have time for a couple of questions.
Go ahead. Municipality mixed with biosolids from a paper mill facility. So they're combining about a 50-50 mix, applied, and then tilled in with the soil.
So those soil chemical properties and certainly the other sites were inorganically fertilized?
That is correct. We've so far applied about 100 pounds of nitrogen per acre so far. And that's on a split plot design, so hopefully we're going to try and tease out some fertilizer differences in the future. But so far, that's all the fertilizing we've done is just that little bit.
Seems like like nitrogen probably wasn't a big limitation if you don't have much plant material.
Correct. So it tickled my nutrient management sense to be applying that much when the grass is this high, but so that's the experiment.
Yes.
What kind of slopes were you looking at?
On our mines, the Hampshire Hill mine is probably maybe 5 to 10% slope. The other two mines are almost flat.
Do you have a lot of sediment discharge on these?
That's an consideration that's going to play into the future because, of course, with the permitting issues behind these mines, they simply can't discharge that much sediment. So, you know, on a mine like Hobet, where there's just not that vigorous growth in the first 2 years, there's probably little way they'd be able to meet their MPDS requirements without a sedimentation pond off these properties.
What was the rate of water solubility?
I think it's 10 megagrams per hectare.
That is one of the treatment, or that is just?
That's just that the way that mine was applied. One of our treatment effects is mine, and the way the different mine was reclaimed, but the actual biosolids application is not really a factor in our experiment, other than that's just what makes up the Hampshire Hill mine.
What was the C to N ratio?
That's a good question. I don't know off the top of my head. The material was applied about a year before our actual seeding rate, and that mine was finished mining in 1993, and it's had three biosolids applications in that time, and it's had other crops planting in between, but I don't know that. I could get that data, but it wasn't part of our experiment.
One more question.
I know down in the Arkansas Delta where they've leavened some soils to get rice production, they found that where they scraped off into the subsoils, they had a hard time getting good rice productivity for a while.
Yeah.
They found it a lot more effective with organic movement, such as poultry litter in there, rather than just inorganic fertilizer.
Yeah.
And I wondered if that's the effect you're seeing with biosolids, that maybe organic matter or some micronutrients that are missing from these fertilizers.
Yeah, I don't know for sure, but that's certainly an excellent postulation. I mean, these soils are almost sterile, really. We don't have any weed germination in that first year because a lot of that material comes 50 feet down in the geologic column. So unless there happens to be, original soil just happens to be in that dump truck load that was at the top, there's probably going to be very little microorganisms and stuff like that. So applying an organic material would really help to increase yield over just an inorganic fertilizer.
Yeah,
let's
give them a speaker.
Thanks for your time.